Well, good morning. I'd love to introduce you this morning to Father Peter Tui, who, amongst his many claims to fame, lives at 162 Bishopsgate Street and we live at 157. Peter's a Colomban priest and has been involved in all sorts of things over his long career as a Colomban priest, from the Philippines to being involved with L'Arche, and for over 20 years being involved in as a chaplain at maximum security prisons here in Perth. So there could have been many things I'd like to ask Peter about, but I thought this morning we'd have a conversation about prisons in Perth and his work in the prisons. So I'll ask some questions, and if you've got any questions, hopefully you'll have some space to ask questions too, and we'll see where we go. So Peter, would you like to start by telling us a bit about what your role as a chaplain was in prisons?
First of all, just thank you for welcoming me here. I feel really at home, even though I'm a blow-in. And it's a beautiful community you have, and it's just nice to be here and be part of it and to sense the strength of your faith, because we all need that energy that comes, this energy which is really the Holy Spirit, which comes to us through others, through our family, our neighbours, but especially through the community of faith to which we belong. And I can sense that this is a very informal but very rich and warm community. So thank you. What did I do in the prison as a chaplain? Well, the truth is, of course, that we're all called to something, and everyone has their particular gifts and charisms and their particular mission from God, and we're all different. But for me, somehow, I sensed that God was calling me to be with these people that I'd never been anywhere near a prison until I went to Kalgoorlie back in 1991. And so anyway, the chaplain in the prison really is there to be something of a pastoral carer for both the staff and the prisoners. The difficulty is, of course, that if you spend most of your time listening to the prisoners, you may be seen by some of the staff as on their side, that side, and not on the officer's side. It's sad, but of course you have to realise that prisons are kind of paramilitary systems, really. Everything's terribly regimented, and in the prison, they have to keep order, and there's only a small number, of officers with all these prisoners. So it's unfortunate, but there's a fair gulf between the two. But anyway, the chaplain is there to be a listening ear to people regardless. And, of course, the officers have an immensely difficult job, especially these days in the prisons in throughout Australia and in other parts of the world, because they're so crowded, because society tends to see, you know, prisons as the place to put people who do bad things. Unfortunately, a lot of horrible things happen in jails, and there's a whole culture there which is to do with prisoners getting drugs, prisoners fighting with one another, bikie gangs fighting turf wars, fights between Aboriginal people because their families outside are fighting over they may have forgotten what, and so in prison too. And so, yeah. I don't want to paint the picture too black, because there's all kinds of beautiful and good things that happen in prisons, apart from running church services, which are really a small part of what the chaplain does. That he or she is there just to bring hope to the people, I would say, you know, to help people to believe in themselves, and for the chaplain to believe in them and their possibilities. And it's true that you've got maybe psychopaths there and people that have done horrific things, but I believe that everyone was created good. I'm sure you do too. And that we all begin life as a little child loved into existence by God and delighted in by the Spirit, and Jesus is our brother, and we are all destined for that happiness and joy of knowing and seeing God face to face. And yet a lot of things go wrong, don't they, in life, and people get caught up in sad things, a lot of domestic violence in our world today, a lot of alienated families, alienated people, lost people, spiritually lost, and a lot of enemy, as they say, just lostness in our society. And people get sucked into the drug culture, and even good people out of control can do horrific things. So I spend a lot of time in the prison just listening to people one-to-one, but running groups too, and we'll talk a bit more about that later, I suppose.
So who's in prison, and what's the effect that prison has on the different people who end up in there?
Well, prison, for the most part, prison is a place to put people who are social misfits, people who are poor, who are from dysfunctional families, people who are intellectually handicapped and do antisocial things, people with intellectual disabilities. Recently arrived migrants from African countries or wherever, Somalia or so on, and who feel left out of society, can't get a job and so on, the unemployed. A lot of Aboriginal people, about 40% of the prisoners in the West Australian jails, the male prisons, are Aboriginal men. And yet they're only less than 3%, maybe, or around 3% of the population. So, you know, in many ways, it's the people that are seen by some people in society as rubbish people who end up in prison, along with, of course, the people that do heinous crimes. You've got people in there for fine default. A lot of the women in women's prisons are women who are there because they didn't pay their fines off, and so they pay them off in prison. But in the meantime, what happens to their children? They're farmed out to relatives, or they are looked after by the state in institutions with tragic consequences for all concerned. So prisons are violent places, sad places, but they're also places where there's an extraordinary healing does take place in some people anyway, who in spite of the what's happening around support one another. I think it's particularly true in the women's prisons. Yeah.
So what does imprisoning people achieve? Are there good things that come out of being in prison?
Yeah, yeah. Well, yes, it's a school of crime and so on, but also it's a place where people can find God. I mean, I go into the prison in order to meet Jesus there, because that's what Jesus said, didn't he, about himself and about us belonging to the body of Christ, that, you know, I was in prison and you visited me. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. I was hungry and you fed me, and so on. When did we do this, Lord? When you did it to the least of my brothers or sisters, you did it to me. So, yeah, and we have, chaplains have some great programs going on in the prisons. And one of them is the Sycamore Tree Program. Does anyone know about the Sycamore Tree Program? It's restorative justice. Thank you, John. Yeah, and the whole idea of Sycamore Tree is to help prisoners to take responsibility for their crimes and to recognise that when they broke into that house, there were people that lived in that house. When they stole that car was used by the people that owned it to get their kids to school and to get to work and to get to see their grandparents and whatever else. And now it's smashed up and whatever. But it's sycamore tree is an amazing thing, really. It's been going for probably about 15 years in the West Australian prisons. There are various forms of restorative justice. I know a friend of mine, Brian Steels, and Dorothy Golding, these two people pioneered restorative justice in its purest form in one of the courts of Perth here, where the judge was Stephen Heath. And what they did was they got the magistrate would refer some of the people that came before them to restorative justice processing. I'm not sure if that's the word. And so what would happen is that Dot Golding and Brian Steels and others, they would go and see, first of all, the victims of crime and ask would they be willing to engage in a dialogue with the person who committed the crime. And they would, of course, see the person who's committed it, whether they are out on bail or whether they're or on remand or whether they were in jail, and see if they were willing to engage in this kind of dialogue. And of course, they wouldn't go into this program unless the offender was remorseful, recognised that they had done wrong. And so they find a community hall or a coffee shop or with big facilities, or somewhere where the not just the offender and the victim meet, but the offender's family and supporters and the victim's family and supporters. And they would engage in a dialogue where, first of all, they'd ask the offender, well, what do you feel about what you've done? And they would, of course, say, well, I really feel bad about it. And do you understand what has happened as a result of that? Well, not really. And so then the victims and family would start to talk about the tragic consequences of the crime and what it has meant to lose their car, to have their home broken into, how the people that live in the house now are constantly on the watch and afraid of being invaded, and they're maybe on the antidepressants or whatever else. There's all kinds of consequences, aren't there, to prison, to a crime, which are not so obvious until people can speak up and talk about their anger at what was done and the trauma that they've suffered as a result. So, and then so a report on this dialogue between victim and offenders and their families goes back to the magistrate, and the magistrate then decides what will happen as a result, whether the person will still be tried and go to jail or whether they will be allowed back into the community. The offender, of course, has to promise, if they're drug addicted, then they have to do courses, obviously, in order to try and be rehabilitated. If they've got an alcohol addiction, they need to promise to be able to go to AA or NA or whatever it is, and maybe do some community work or something in the community to pay back for something of the harm they've caused. The whole concept behind this is that crime is not just an individual thing between a person that commits it and the victim of the crime or victims. It's very much a rupture in the community. And because there is this breakdown, it's in the community that the healing has to take place. One of the sad things about putting people in great big penal institutions is that it's almost as if the community has no responsibility for the person, and the person no responsibility to the community they came from where they did what they did. And so, you know, that's precisely where the healing is going to happen. With Sycamore Tree, it's a bit different because here, people who have been victims of very serious crime, mostly, you know, one I can think of, Karen, was her daughter, age 15, who was killed by another girl who was jealous of her over a boy that, boyfriend. But at any rate, she was one of the people that used to go with a team, maybe, you know, four or five victims of crime, going in to talk with prisoners who had volunteered to do this course about what the consequences of the crime that was committed to them. And the prisoners, there might be, you know, 15 prisoners on this course, they meet, for 7 consecutive Wednesday mornings. And at each morning, at each gathering, they'd spend about 2 hours in groups, and they're looking at the whole nature of crime and its effects on the community and on individuals. But above all, the victims coming in would share about the pain that they'd suffered as a result of the crimes committed. And then it was over to the offenders, the prisoners, to actually own up about what they had done, and then to begin to think about what the consequences were for their family, for the family of the victim, for the wider community, and so on. It's immensely powerful because people, you really feel that they're almost forced, obliged, in the light of the very moving sharing of pain by the victims that had come in, to face up to and acknowledge that they had caused great suffering to others. But the other thing, the other side of all that, is that every prisoner in jail is usually a victim of crime before they are an offender. And so we have, you know, people trying to understand how they got to this point of doing what they did, and inevitably they talk about growing up in a family where mum or dad was alcoholic, or there was domestic violence, and how they used to hide under the bed when the family parents were quarrelling or whatever, or get out of the house. And at an early, in young teenagers even, some of them would have left home and been on the streets and meet up with other kids that are equally lost, and they get into drugs and then start breaking into houses or doing crime anyway. It's an extraordinary program, the Sycamore Tree program. It's named after, guess who? Zacchaeus. Yes, that's right, Zacchaeus, who climbed the sycamore tree, and who was a crook, it would seem, because when Jesus invited himself to Zacchaeus' house and they had the meal and all of that, Zacchaeus promised Jesus that he would give back what he had stolen, and where he'd ripped people off, he'd compensate them, and so on. But it's a ideal image to have of what the process that we all have to go to through when we are being reconciled with others. And that's a good point, I guess, that we often tend to think of prisoners as being, you know, them over there, but the truth is that all of us fail others at times. All of us need to be reconciled with those that we've not been talking to or had disagreements with. And it's a painful process, but it does involve facing the facts, the truth. The problem is that in jail, people can say, what are you doing here? Well, I'm here doing time. I'm doing time, and then I'll get out. The issue is not what they've done to others or what they've suffered themselves. It's simply that they've got this sentence to do, and as soon as possible they want to get parole and get out. And sadly, they go back often to the very same situations from which they came, and then they come back to jail.
Can you talk a bit about what might keep people out of jail then?
A job. One thing's a job. But no, on a much deeper, further level, what they've been doing is looking at this much more from a community point of view than an individual point of view, and they talk these days about the causes and the of crime in the community, and there's a thing called justice reinvestment. When you look at the say the Perth as in, with its suburbs and all the rest of it, in what suburbs is there a great lot of crime? And I won't mention names, but nevertheless, there are areas that clearly are where a lot of criminals come from. Criminals is not a fair word, of course, because they're people who do crime, and they're still people who can love and respect others also. But it's looking at it from a sociological point of view and seeing that the part of the cause of people going to jail is not just what they actually did on that night to that person or whatever, but it's the whole culture in that area, in that neighbourhood. It may be that there's nothing whatever for the kids to do after school, or and you know, PCYC can do a lot to engage kids in healthy things. It may be that there's a huge amount of unemployment and very little in the way of helping people to train to get work. It may be that there's a great need for a centre where people can get support when they come out of prison. I was in Bunbury there recently, and I've got a good friend down there. He's an Irish priest that works in, or has worked, he's just retired, he's in his 80s now. He used to work in Nigeria and Sierra Leone. His name is Pascal Carney, and the interesting thing is that Pascal in the Bunbury prison used to be quite involved in the sycamore tree programs that they were running there, and he went in not just as a chaplain but as a victim, because he was in jail in Nigeria, I think it was, because there was a change of government there when he was working as a missionary, as a priest, and the priest had been the people that received relief goods from overseas and so on, and then distributed them to the people. And so they were regarded as somehow in with the government. And then when the government changed and a new military leader, whoever, took over, then they were thrown in jail. So these, and Pascal talks about that experience, among other things. Anyway, Pascal, one of the things he took me to when I was down there recently was a centre called Doors Wide Open. And it's a great idea. Has anyone heard of it? It's a centre for people when they get out of jail, somewhere they can go. And I, when we went there, I found out it was run by two women and a group of supporters. It was very much a local community thing. I don't think they received government funding, so they were relying on support from businesses and so on. And they basically welcomed people when they were looking for work. They had AA and NA group meetings there in the centre, in the heart of Bunbury, and they'd advocate for them and all that sort of thing. Doors Wide Open. I don't know of any such thing here in Perth. There may be, but I've never heard of it. But it'd be wonderful if that sort of thing were to be there, especially in those areas where there's a lot of poverty and a lot of drug dealing and violence and so on. One of the reasons people come back to jail over and over again is because they don't have work and they aren't prepared to go and do a program, say, to sort of to deal with their addiction to ice or whatever. And they have very little in the way of community support. If they've been in jail for a long time, they may have become almost totally cut off from even their own family, or that the family may not want them back because of what they've done, and so on. But having a centre where people can come and receive support and help with getting work and all that is immensely important.
I've just noticed we're running out of time, so I'm not going to be able to open it up to questions from everyone, but hopefully Peter can stay for a cup of tea and you can ask him questions then. But thank you very much, Peter, for coming and sharing with us, and it's been lovely to hear from you.
Thank you.
Thank you.